Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Delta Junction area state parks are transitioning to private management. According to a release from Northern Region State Parks, the agency has issued permits to K&K Operations to run the Big Delta State Historical Park and to Big Dipper Adventures to operate park facilities at Quartz Lake, Clearwater Delta, and Donnelly Creek. The contracts can be contested, but the operators are allowed to begin work immediately at the facilities, which closed a month ago due to state budget cuts. State Parks says agency staff helped the contractors reopen the sites Tuesday. Cost and geography have slowed the reach of high-speed internet in Fairbanks, but a state legislator also blames foot-dragging by local telecommunications providers. As KUAC's Robert Hinnon reports, Representative David Guttenberg says broadband expansion models successfully employed in the lower 48 may offer a fix.
Representative David Guttenberg says he's heard from constituents for years they can't get high-speed internet access in their areas. And he says that's a problem as society grows increasingly dependent on large bandwidth.
Teachers can't do their classroom. People can't apply for the permanent fund online because they don't have broadband. That is not acceptable.
Guttenberg says part of the problem is the private sector is not meeting market demands. Carl Kowalski says there are reasons for that. Kowalski is the University of Alaska's chief information technology officer.
Part of the reason is economics. It costs money to extend fiber lines. It costs money to provide cellular access in areas.
Kowalski says that easy access to Alaska's wilderness many residents crave has a dark side when it comes to enjoying a high-speed internet. Guttenberg isn't convinced. He points to electric cooperatives as models that have successfully provided connectivity in remote areas. Just as early cooperatives like Golden Valley Electric Association provided power to farmers, a new generation of co-ops are springing up in the information age.
Right now, we've been letting the provider sit back and tell us what's available, right? And I, as a consumer, don't think it's meeting our standards.
Tonight, Guttenberg says he'll unveil a consumer-driven model. The meeting begins at 5:30 at the Murry Auditorium on the UAF campus. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough will open a long-awaited central recycling center September 1st. Borough Recycling Director Sean Huntington says the facility will operate out of a renovated building leased from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, just north of the Johansson Expressway.
It's centralized in the community, very large facility, three times the size that the rescue mission was operating out of.
The Fairbanks Rescue Mission has run a recycling center for 8 years in South Fairbanks, and Huntington says the borough is contracted with the organization to operate the new facility.
They've got a long history of doing it the right way, safely.
He says the center will accept a variety of aluminum, cardboard, paper, and plastics.
We're going to be open 5 days a week to start with, recycling the same products that the rescue mission did. And in addition, we're also going to now be doing electronics.
Longtime local electronics recycler Green Star of Interior Alaska will handle that aspect of the operation for 2 months under an extension of an existing contract.
Green Star has one of their e-debt depots scheduled for August, but that will be their last one.
Huntington says the borough will issue a request for proposals in the next couple of weeks for a permanent electronics recycler. He says the borough will also issue an RFP for a contractor to handle glass, but he's not optimistic, noting that glass is typically recycled into sand.
Honestly, in the interior of Alaska, sand is cheap. There's a lot of silt in the area.
Huntington says one focus of borough recycling staff will be to educate the public about the importance of sorting recyclables and what's acceptable, especially when it comes to plastics.
With the bottles and jugs, a good thing to remember is no caps. They need to be clean and dry, no food contaminants.
Borough officials plan to celebrate the new facility with a ribbon cutting and grand opening on September 1st. Melting sea ice is forcing polar bears onto dry land where they pose a safety threat in communities. Alaska Energy Desk's Carter Barrett reports.
In Halloween of 2014, the kids at the village of Arviat in the Canadian Arctic had to trick-or-treat indoors. In the community center, they had a warm place to show off their costumes. But more importantly, they were safe from three polar bears outside. That night, a polar bear and her two yearlings spent 3 hours on the outskirts of town trying to find a way in. The Polar Bear Patrol used four-wheelers and bright lights to try to keep the bears from getting too close to town. Elizabeth Kruger with the World Wildlife Fund was there that night.
And so the bears would go a bit out on the ice, and then they would just wait for the four-wheelers to go away, and then they'd come back on shore and try to cause trouble.
Polar bears usually hunt on the sea ice, stalking unsuspecting seals. But when there's open water where there used to be ice, the bears are forced onto land. Jim Wilder, the Polar Bear Project leader for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Anchorage, recently published a paper on how climate change is impacting polar bear behavior.
When they have less opportunity to hunt, obviously that has impacts to their body condition, so the bears become thinner, skinnier. And what our study has shown, actually, is they become a little more aggressive in their pursuit of feeding opportunities.
The study is a first of its kind, combining research from the United States, Norway, Canada, Greenland, and Russia to look at what motivates polar bears to attack humans. Wilder's study found when bears are thinner and desperate, they also become more aggressive hunters. For evidence of this, the paper points to the worst years on record for polar bear attacks, 2010 to 2014, a period of historically low summer sea ice.
Bears in general, and particularly polar bears, make their living by investigating anomalies on the landscape, you know, something that might indicate there's something there to eat.
That used to mean places in the ice that indicated there were seals. But now, small coastal communities on the flat tundra landscape can also look attractive to the bears. There have only been 6 recorded polar bear attacks in the last 145 years in Alaska. A majority of bears that attacked people were malnourished. Part of Elizabeth Kruger's job is advising small communities on the best way to keep polar bears out of town.
This is something we haven't seen before, and it is going to cause drastic changes no matter what we do.
In order to prepare for increased interactions between polar bears and humans, Wilder's study mentions Arctic residents should learn to recognize malnourished bears, manage their trash properly, and, if it comes down to it, know how to use a firearm. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Carter Barrett in Juneau.
And I'm Dan Bross.